I looked at this story. As you know, we are studying the life of David. And this is a long story. But I didn't feel like we could cut into it. So today, I'm going to do a lot of reading. I'll make a few comments along the way. You know me. But we're going to take a look at how God used someone with the abilities that God put into their life. Turn with me to the book of 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel. We'll be beginning in just a moment with verse 16 of chapter 16. 1 Samuel 16, and we'll be actually be beginning with verse 14. I'm sorry. Chapter 16, verse 14 in just a minute. A message I call the harp and the slingshot. Last week, we began a study of the life of David, one of the most famous characters in the Old Testament. We saw how he was acknowledged by the prophet Samuel to be the successor of King Saul, even though that would not take place for more than 20 years. We noted how Saul had lost his right to be king because he disobeyed God on an important assignment. And now Saul has lost that privilege, and Samuel, the prophet, has been sent to Bethlehem. Remember that town? Bethlehem, to find a man named Jesse and to find one of his sons who would be named, or at least anointed, as Saul's successor. Samuel was sent by God to find this young man, but Samuel was not told who it was. We saw how Jesse was proud to present his boys before, and I say boys, they were young men, before the prophet Samuel, because Samuel was a respected prophet throughout Israel. He's actually the first prophet of the people of Israel in Israel's new land. And when Samuel saw the oldest of Jesse's boys, a guy by the name of Eliab, he thought, this has got to be the one. He's tall, he's strong, he's handsome. He's got to be the person to succeed Saul. But God spoke to his prophet and said, no, don't look at the outward appearance, because I, the Lord, look at the heart. And this man's heart is not right with me. Well, you remember the story from last week. Samuel actually examined seven of Jesse's sons, one at a time. But he sensed in his spirit that none of them were worthy. None of them were right. Not one of them matched the character that God was seeking. And so the old prophet asked Jesse, he said, well, do you have any more boys? Are there any more sons in this family? Jesse meekly acknowledged that the youngest was not there. He was just a teenager. He was out in the fields keeping watch over his father's sheep. As far as Jesse was concerned, this teenage boy was not important enough to even be at the event. And he didn't even mention his name. The old prophet said, you got to bring him too. And so they sent for David, and David shows up. And when Samuel saw him, God spoke to his prophet and told him, this is the young man, anoint him. Now, nobody there really understood why Samuel was anointing David. I'm sure that the old prophet whispered in David's ear what this was about, but everybody else just assumed this had to do with following Samuel in ministry as one of God's prophets. Nevertheless, Samuel knew the reason, and David would be whispered the reason. And from that moment on, the Holy Spirit filled David's life. His life would completely change, and the future of his country would change with that day. So we're going to take up our story where we left off last week. 1 Samuel chapter 16, starting with verse 14, a section I call God Prepared David. Now the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and a harmful spirit from the Lord tormented him. And Saul's servants said to him, behold now, a harmful spirit from God is tormenting you. Let our Lord now command your servants who are before you to seek out a man who is skillful in playing the lyre. And when the harmful spirit from God is upon you, he will play it and you will be well. Saul said to his servants, provide for me a man who can play well and bring him to me. One of the young men answered, behold, I've seen a son of Jesse, the Bethlehemite, who is skillful in playing, a man of valor, a man of war, prudent in speech, and a man of good presence, and the Lord is with him. Therefore Saul sent messengers to Jesse and said, send me David, your son, who is with the sheep. And Jesse took a donkey laden with bread and a skin of wine and a young goat and sent them by David, his son, to Saul. And David came to Saul and entered his service. And Saul loved him greatly, and he became his armor bearer. And Saul sent to Jesse, saying, "Let David remain in my service, for he has found favor in my sight." And whenever the harmful spirit from God was upon Saul, David took the lyre and played it with his hand. So Saul was refreshed and was well, and the harmful spirit departed from him. Now, this is a strange section. Would you say it's strange? And it requires some explanation. Because we know God does not do evil, nor does he cause evil, nor is he connected with evil. God cannot do evil. That's against his nature, and God cannot be against his own nature. So when we consider this passage as one of the puzzling sections of the Bible, we have to understand this. There's an active sense in which God does something, and there's a passive sense in which he allows something. In one sense, he is active and he acts to do. In the other sense, he's passive and he allows to happen. But in ancient Hebrew thought, it didn't matter which way things went. Whatever happened, they considered that as from God. That was their mindset. Now, what actually happened was this. God withdrew his Holy Spirit from Saul. Now, we today as Christians, we don't have to worry about that. Aren't you glad of that? God does not withdraw his Spirit from us. Thank God for that. But when God's protection was withdrawn from Saul, that provided an opening for Satan. And Satan was quick to appoint one of his demons to harass Saul. God allowed it. He didn't cause it. He allowed it. And this evil spirit attacks Saul's mind. And that's how a lot of demon work goes on, by the way, attacking people's minds, and made Saul depressed. In fact, drove Saul into manic depression. And he would have these spells of moodiness where he was just absolutely beside himself and depressed. And everybody in his court could see that. Their king needed some help. So they made a suggestion. They knew that music helps people out. You know, it lifts our spirits to hear music. So they made a suggestion. King, you need some music to help lift you out of this depression. Somebody in your kingdom can surely play very well. Why don't you give us an order and we'll go out and find somebody who can play well and lift your spirits with their music. And the king agreed. A young member of the court stood up with a recommendation. Now, this is how God is already at work. God is already at work around us. God was already at work because somebody in the king's court had met David. Already knew him. And this young man introduces the idea of David to the king Saul. He says, "I know a guy. He can play music. In fact, he's a fine young man." Now, the servant of the king kind of embellishes the story a little bit. You know, he's a man of war. No, he isn't. He's a teenage boy. He later on will become a man of war. He embellished the story a little bit, made himself look good before his king. You ever try to look good before your boss? But he goes on. He says, "I know a guy." And Saul says, "Go get him." And so word is sent to Jesse, "Send me your son David." And David goes to the kingdom. David's qualities were known. And he is sent to the kingdom. He's sent to the kingdom. He's sent to the king's place. This is not Jerusalem. The king isn't there yet. He's in Gibeah. That's where the kingdom's, where Saul is located at. But David played a lyre. Now, a lyre is kind of a harp. It's a small harp. It has a curve on the bottom, strings going up and down, and a curve on the top. And you held it with one hand over your shoulder, and with the other hand, you plucked the strings. Kind of a small harp. So David was good with that. And whoever had met him from the king's court knew that not only was he good with a lyre, but he was actually a man of God. He had good character. So David is sent to Saul's court, and he plays there as a court musician, and Saul gets to know him. And notice the scripture says Saul really liked him, really was impressed with him, and sent word back to David's dad and said, "I want you to let your boy stay here because I'm impressed with him. And so he's going to be my court musician, and in his downtime, he's going to go over to the soldiers' barracks and help out with the armor, make everything clean and polished and keep everything up to date." And so that's what David does. He's sent from the fields of Bethlehem out of the blue to the court of the king. Interesting how God works, isn't it? Chapter 17, we're going to look at this in just a moment. As David is there, playing the lyre every now and then, getting to know the people in the royal court. Do you know that he was getting an education about how to act in the royal court? He was learning how to speak properly, how to conduct yourself properly. He was learning how a king should behave, at least when he's in his right mind. He was being prepared to one day lead a royal court, even though he didn't know it. He was just there, and yet God was using that as a time of education for him. And it probably lasted a year. He was there several months. But he doesn't stay there all the time, as we'll see in the next chapter. He does go back and forth to his dad's place. And it's one of these times when he's not with the king, something happens that changes Israel's history. Chapter 17, verses 1 through 11, I call God arranged for David. Now the Philistines gathered their armies for battle. And they were gathered at Succoth, which belongs to Judah. They invaded Judah. And encamped between Succoth and Azekah and Ephrathamnes. And I don't know how to pronounce that. I don't care. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered and encamped in the valley of Elah and drew up in a line of battle against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on the mountain on one side, and Israel stood on the mountain on the other side with a valley between them. And there came out from the camp of the Philistines a champion named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a helmet of bronze on his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze. And he had bronze armor on his legs, and a javelin of bronze slung between his shoulders. The shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam, it's thick, and his spear's head, the pointed part, weighed 600 shekels of iron. And his shield bearer went before him, protect him against arrows. He stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why have you come up to draw out for battle? Am I not a Philistine? Are you not servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he's able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, you shall be our servants and serve us." And the Philistine said, "I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we might fight together." When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Philistines, pronounce it either way, were ancient Israel enemies. They lived on the coast. Kind of interesting, the Gaza Strip's still a problem today, isn't it? That's where they were. They come from the coast, and they had invaded Judah, part of Israel, and they made their way within 15 miles of Bethlehem. And Saul and his army has gone out to face them, and Saul's army is mostly militia. And they take a stand, and as it happens, they are on one side of a mountain, and the other armies on the other side of the mountain. There's a valley between them, and both armies are facing each other. And all of a sudden, out of the ranks of the Philistine comes a very big guy who comes out to taunt Israel. He's actually 9 feet 9 inches tall. That's a big dude. 9 feet 9 inches tall. He has a bronze helmet, a bronze coat of mail that covers him from his shoulders all the way down to his thighs. He has bronze shin guards that goes up the front of his thighs. He's got a shield bearer, a guy holding his shield out in front of him. I mean, I hate to be the shield bearer, you know, they shoot the arrows, it might hit me, but I'm going to protect you, boss. He has a shield bearer. He's got a javelin on his behind his back. He's got a spear. They say it's the wood of it's like a weaver's beam. It's thick. Has an iron tip on the part of it. This episode takes place at the beginning of the Iron Age. But at this point in history, iron is very expensive, and so very few people have it. Most of the warriors use bronze. So he's got a thick sword with an iron tip. And by the way, that iron tip by itself weighs 15 pounds. So he can crush anybody else's bronze armor when he thrusts that spear into them. And he's got a sword at his side. So, man, this is a mean dude. A 9-foot-plus guy, bronze armor on him. His armor altogether weighs 125 pounds. That's what he's carrying. And he comes out and he begins to taunt Israel. I mean, this is a serious adversary. And he says, listen, there's no need for our armies to fight each other. Here I am, the champion of the Philistine. Bring one of your best warriors out, let him fight me, and whoever wins, we'll consider that the end of the conflict. We win, you're our slaves. You win, we're your slaves. Well, all the people in Israel look at that guy, and they say, not me. No, sorry, Bob. You going to fight him over there? No. You going to fight him over there? King Saul, you going to fight him? King kind of looks down at the ground. Nobody's volunteering to fight this guy. Did you know that God is going to use this to set up the opportunity for David to appear as something greater than a musician? So let's move on to the story, what I call God Sent David, verses 12 through 19. Now David was the son of the Ephrathite of Bethlehem in Judah, named Jesse, who had 8 sons. In the days of Saul, the man was already old and advanced in years. The 3 oldest sons of Jesse had followed Saul to the battle. And the names of his 3 sons who went to the battle were Eliab, the firstborn, next to him Abinadab, and the 3rd Shammah. David was the youngest. The 3 eldest followed Saul. But David went back and forth from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. That explains why he's there. He's not at the court all the time. He kind of goes back and forth. Help his dad out, and then he goes back to court. And he helps his dad out and goes back. So he's at home at this particular time. And Jesse said to David, his son, take for your brothers an ephah of parched grain. Take him some roasted grain and these 10 loaves of bread and carry them quickly to the camp of your brothers. Also take these 10 cheeses to the commander of their 1,000. See if your brothers are well and bring me some token from them. Let me know how they're doing. Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. Well, they were standing there about to fight. God motivated the old father to want to know about his son. That's very natural. Nothing unusual about that. How are my boys doing? David's at home taking care of the sheep. And Jesse says, David, I can't stand anymore. I got to know how your older brothers are doing. Take some food to them and take something for their officer. And go check on them, and then bring me back word to know how they're doing. Now, this is a very natural desire. Any dad would want to be able to do that if they could. But you know, God is directing the timing. That's the point. He's directing the timing. And all the while, this giant, this Goliath of Gath, is challenging the Hebrews every day. In fact, he challenges them twice a day. He comes out in the morning, and he comes out in the evening, and challenges them 2 times a day, all the time. Every day. And every day, nobody volunteers to fight him. Every day, the king's looking around. Will somebody volunteer? Somebody? Nobody does. So let's read verses 20 and following, what I call God-inspired David. David rose early in the morning and left the sheep with a keeper and took the provisions, and he went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the encampment as the hosts were going out to the battle line, shouting the war cry. And Israel and the Philistines drew up for battle, army against army. And David left the things in charge of the keeper of the baggage and ran to the ranks and went and greeted his brothers. As he talked with them, behold, the champion of the Philistines of Gath, Goliath by name, came up out of the ranks of the Philistines and spoke the same words as before. And David heard him. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him. They backed up and were very much afraid. And the men of Israel said, have you seen this man who has come up? Surely he's come up to defy Israel. And the king will enrich the man who kills him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel. David said to the men who stood by, what shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? And people answered him in the same way, so it shall be done to the man who kills him. David took the provisions his dad had loaded on the donkey, and he traveled the 15 miles, and he made it there before evening. The two armies were taking their positions one more time. One army on the hillside, the other army on the other hillside, the valley in between them. David left the provisions with the quartermaster, and he searched for his brothers. And he found them, and he talked with them for a few moments as they're standing there holding their spear, fixing to go fight. And as he's talking with them, out comes Goliath yet again, making his taunt. And all the men in the front ranks sort of backed up. Not me. Let me trade places with you, buddy. I'm going to get back a little bit. They all backed up. But they did begin to talk. David was puzzled. The men in the ranks where his brother was at began to talk and explain things. And notice how they describe Goliath. The men in the ranks say, "Have you seen this man? Have you seen this guy? Man, look at that dude. He's 9 feet tall. He's too big to fight." David looks at him and says, "He's too big to miss." "Who is this uncircumcised Philistine?" You would know that the Jews practice circumcision as a way of saying that that race belonged to God. "Who is this guy who's out of the covenant with God, that he would defy the armies of the living God? Who is this guy?" David sees the adversary as a spiritual adversary, not just as a tall fellow. Yet they also told David about the king's enticements. Because by this time, it's been a month plus, King Saul has been offering all kinds of stuff to get anybody to fight. He's saying, "If you'll fight and kill that Philistine, I will give you money. I will make your family free from taxation." That'd get my attention. "I'll make your family free from taxation, and I'll give my oldest daughter in marriage to you. Three things." David hears that, and he checks it out. I mean, he asks about it. He said, "Would you repeat that to me? Say that one more time." And they tell him about it. And David says, "Money, no taxation, and a good-looking woman. I'm in." Well, his attitude was very different from the attitudes of everybody else. So let's move on in our story. Verses 28 and following, I call God encouraged David. Now Eliab, his oldest brother, when he heard he spoke to the men, Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and he said, "Why have you come down? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your presumption and the evil of your heart. You've come down to see the battle." And David said, "What have I done now? Was it not but a word?" And he turned away from him, turned toward another, and spoke in the same way. He's checking out those enticements again. And the people answered him as before. When the words that David spoke were heard, they repeated them before Saul, and he sent for him. And David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight this Philistine." Saul said to David, "You're not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth, and he's been a man of war since his youth." But David said to Saul, "Your servant used to keep sheep for his father. And when there came a lion or a bear and took a lamb from the flock, I went after him. And I struck him and delivered it out of his mouth. And if he arose against me, I caught him by his beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has struck down both lions and bears. This uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them, for he has defied the armies of the living God." And David said, "The Lord, who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." And Saul said to David, "Well, go. May the Lord be with you." David's oldest brother, Eliab, who Samuel thought was going to be the one to be anointed in the first place, was not amused with David talking to all his comrades there in the ranks about what the king was going to offer. And maybe he was a little bit embarrassed because he didn't volunteer to fight the giant. He didn't step forward. And here his little bitty brother, and I'm using that phrase kind of loosely here, his youngest brother, is talking about beating the giant. David gave a teenager's reply, well, what did I say? But you know, sometimes our greatest challenge is with our own family. Sometimes our greatest challenge is dealing with our own family. Well, David was not going to be deterred. He kept asking about the situation. He kept asking about the promises from the king. David was showing courage. He seemed not to be intimidated by this large enemy. So that kind of spirit, that kind of attitude was eventually reported to King Saul. David was definitely not showing the fear the other soldiers were showing. Nobody else talked like that. The king had been looking for somebody to fight this giant for over a month. So David was taken to Saul's tent. And when Saul saw him, his jaw probably dropped. Oh, it's you. Yeah, Saul was probably a bit discouraged. Here was this teenager, about 19 years old at this point. And Saul remembered that he'd been serving in the court as a court musician and part-time armor polisher. He was not a soldier. But David spoke up. Verse 32 again. David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine." "I'm volunteering, sir. I'm volunteering." "Well, nobody else had. I'm volunteering." And Saul looked at this teenage young man. He looked at him. He said, "There's no way. There ain't no way you can win. You're a youth. Why, this fellow's been fighting since he was your age." Saul was looking at the outward circumstances, facing a giant of a man who's an experienced warrior, and I'm going to send out an inexperienced teenager. But you know, God delights in using small things to do great things. He delights in doing that. And that's what's going to happen. And David began to describe his life experience to the king. He said, "This is not the first time I've had conflict. I've had conflict in my life before. I have been a shepherd for my dad. I've been keeping his sheep. And sometimes those sheep have been attacked by the wild animals. I've had a lion attack the sheep. I think if a lion came in toward my flock, I'd say, okay, you're on your own, guys." David said, "No, I fought with a lion." He said, "If a bear attacked my flock." And by the way, the notes, they say that the Syrian bear was more feared than the lions. It was a ferocious animal. "If a lion attacked my flock, and I would take my slingshot and I would knock that creature down, and I would go up there and I'd take my dagger and I'd stab it in its throat and I'd kill it, and I'd rescue the sheep from those animals. I fought a bear, I fought a lion, and this big dude, he's going to be just like one of them. I'm going to take care of him. He's going to hit the ground. The Lord has protected me and given me strength to fight the lion and the bear, and the Lord will enable me to fight this Philistine." The king says, "Well, it's your funeral. I hope God is with you. Go right ahead." Saul doesn't have any confidence, but David does, because he knows where his strength comes from. So let's look at verses 38 and following. God directed David. Then Saul clothed David with his armor. He put a helmet of bronze on his head and clothed him with a coat of mail. And David strapped his sword over his armor, and he tried in vain to go, for he had not tested them. Then David said to Saul, "I cannot go with these, for I've not tested them." So David put them off. Then he took his staff in his hand and chose 5 smooth stones from the brook and put them in his shepherd's pouch. His sling was in his hand, and he approached the Philistine. Saul tried to clothe David with his own royal armor. By the way, David had been polishing that armor over the last year. He knew about it, but he never put it on. But Saul was a tall fella. Saul himself was a tall guy. He's probably pushing 7 feet tall himself, because when he was anointed king, he was the tallest person in Israel. And so his armor doesn't fit David. And David's not used to wearing bronze armor. I mean, if you put on a bunch of metal stuff on your body, you're not used to it. It's hard to move around. And David said, "Wait a minute, I can't move around in this. I can't maneuver in this. I'm not used to it, and I've never used a sword in my life. I can't fight this way. I've got to be myself." That's the point. I've got to be myself. So he takes off all of that stuff. David goes out of the king's tent, and he goes back to the they're on the edge of a mountainside, and he goes and finds a brook that's running down the mountain, and he finds some rocks in that brook, and he puts five of them in his bag. David is going to do things his own way. You know, shepherds were very good with slingshots. And these slingshots obviously are not the kind that kids play with like that. They actually were the long strap that had a pouch in the middle. And the shepherd would take it, wrap around his hand, put the rock in the pouch, take the other part of it, hold it with his thumb and finger, and whirl it over his head, and then let go of the loose end. Did you know that they could throw those rocks 100 miles an hour? They could throw those rocks faster than most major league pitchers can pitch. And when we talk about these rocks, we're not talking about little tiny pebbles. What they used was about the size of a tennis ball. So they could take that tennis ball-sized rock, they could whirl it over their heads, and they could let go of that strap and hold on the other side, and that rock would fly. And that's a short-distance weapon. It doesn't go very far. You can't do it 200 yards away. But you can do it when you're close to the enemy. When he's right there at you, you can do it. There's a record in the book of Judges of a time earlier in Israel's history when Israel had a militia of slingshot throwers. They actually were left-handed slingshot throwers, that the record says they could throw at a hair and not miss. Throw at a hair and not miss. They were good with this. And David had been a shepherd. He had been practicing. I mean, what do you do when you're watching the sheep all day, okay? He had been practicing. And that's why when a lion showed up, he knew how to throw that thing and hit that lion in the head, stun it, take a dagger and kill the lion. And same thing with the bear. So David, he was good with that. This was something God had put in his life through his life experience. God had prepared David for this moment by giving David challenges earlier so that he was ready for this challenge. He's ready to go. So let's move on with our story, verses 41 and following. I call God strengthened David. And the Philistine moved forward and came near to David with his shield bearer in front of him. And when the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, ruddy and handsome in appearance, but young. And the Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistine said to David, "Come to me, I'll give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field." Then David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down and cut off your head. And I will give the dead bodies of the host of the Philistine this day to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all the assembly may know that the Lord saves, not with a sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into my hand." Pretty tough words. David stepped out from the Hebrew ranks. I bet all those thousands of soldiers looked at this teenage boy. He's going down there to face this giant. And they're all thinking, what kind of fool is this? What kind of idiot is this young man? He's naive as heck. He'll die before he even reaches the giant. John will throw his spear at him and kill him before he even gets within 10 yards of him. They're all looking at him. But David is going toward him. The giant sees him, and the giant is disgusted. He's insulted. "I've been crying out for a month to send a warrior against me, and a shepherd boy is coming at me, holding a staff, or am I some kind of dog you come at me with a stick? Who are you?" And the Philistine curses David, curses the armies of Israel, and says, "Come on down to me, kid. I'll kill you with one stroke, and your body will be food for the animals." But David's not intimidated. David's not intimidated at all. He said, you come at me with all this stuff, this bronze armor, this javelin, this spear, this sword. You come with me with all this stuff. I come at you in the name of the Lord. Because in defying Israel's army, you defy the God of Israel. And he will deliver you into my hands. And not only am I going to kill you, but my fellow soldiers are going to kill all your guys. Your guys, all your Philistine army is going to be lying on the ground as food for the birds and the animals. Kind of gross, isn't it? That's what happened in those days. David's not intimidated. He's going forward while everybody else had backed up. And he says, this battle will show that my God is real. Yahweh, Jehovah, is true God. And this is going to show it. Well, he's either crazy or right. One of the two. Thank God he's right. Let's look at verses 48 and following, what I call God-enabled David. When the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David, David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the Philistine. Remember, everybody else had backed up and run. He runs toward him. And David put his hand in the bag and took out a stone and slung it and struck the Philistine on his forehead. The stone sank into his forehead, and he fell on his face to the ground. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and with a stone and struck and killed him. There was no sword in the hand of David. That is when he was approaching him. Then David ran and stood over the Philistine and took his sword, the other guy's sword, and drew it out of its sheath and killed him and cut off his head with it. When the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. And the men of Israel and Judah rose with a shout and pursued the Philistines as far as Gath and the gates of Ekron, so that the wounded Philistines fell on the way from Shaaraim as far as Gath and Ekron. And the people of Israel came back from chasing the Philistines, and they plundered their camp. And David took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem. That actually would take place years later, but he would bring the skull to Jerusalem later on in time. But he put his armor in his tent. I can see the picture. Goliath starts coming down the hill with a smirk. Oh, I'm going to kill this teenage boy. I'm just going to take my spear and throw it one time. This is all going to be over with. He's coming down with a smirk. And David's running toward him. And remember, slingshot is a short-range weapon. He has to get close to him. He has to get close to him so he can be accurate and hit him. So they're coming at each other. And this giant's just ready to have one whack and cuck this kid out. David takes one of those rocks, starts whirling it in the air. And the giant's thinking, what does he think he is? You think I'm some kind of dog? And he whirls that thing, and all of a sudden, all this bronze armor doesn't cover his forehead. And that rock hits him right between the eyes. Hard enough, 100 miles an hour, hard enough, it knocks him cold. He falls flat on his face. And the shield bearer is going, I think I'm out of here. He'd never seen his master fall down like that. And David runs up to this giant. And you can bet all the armies are looking. And David pulls out the giant's sword. It must have been a big sword. And he holds it up in the sunlight. And all the people can see that sword gleaming in the sunlight. And with one whack, he whack, cuts off his head. The head comes off and the blood comes out. That's a ooey gooey scene. And then he picked up that head with a helmet still on it. And he holds it up in the sunlight with the sunlight gleaming on that bronze helmet. And everybody can see this dude is dead. He's a goner. And the Philistines look at that and say, whoa. If a shepherd can do that, what about all those other guys standing on the other side of the hill? And they begin to back up. And some of them begin to turn around, and a panic ensues in the Philistine ranks, and they begin to run. And when that happens, the commanders of the Hebrews see an opportunity. They say, all right, guys, forward, charge, go after them. And the Hebrews run down the hill, and the Philistines start running off the hill, and they begin to chase them. And they begin to engage the enemy and fight them. As the Philistines are running, fighting back, the Hebrews are coming at them. And they fight them, and they fight them, and they fight them, and they kill them, and they slaughter them for 10 miles. For 10 miles. The Philistines are slaughtered on the field. And then the army of the Hebrews are probably tired by the end, but they come back. And there's the camp of the Philistines where the army, their guys had abandoned, and they start taking all the possessions, all the food, all the weapons, probably picked up some of those bronze weapons that were left. They plundered their camp. And meanwhile, David probably got a little help from a couple of guys. He takes the armor off that giant. He goes and puts all that armor in his tent, which he had carried with him, and he's holding on to that head. He's holding on to the head of the guy that everybody was scared of. He's just holding, here it is. Here's the guy. Man, look, that must have been something. Here's the fella y'all are terrified of. He's dead, dead, dead. That brings us to as far as we're going to go to the story today, the last section I call God Blessed David. Let's look at verses 55 and following. As soon as Saul saw David go out against the Philistine, he said to Abner, the commander of the army, "Abner, whose son is this youth?" And Abner said, "As your soul lives, O king, I do not know." And the king said, "Inquire whose son the boy is." And as soon as David returned from striking down the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistine in his hand. And Saul said to him, "Whose son are you, young man?" David said, "I am the son of your servant Jesse, the Bethlehemite." At first glance, it almost sounds like Saul didn't know who David was. That's not what it's saying. Saul couldn't remember who his daddy was. Remember, one of the three enticements was that the father's house would be free from taxation. Saul had to get that straight. Who am I going to set free from being taxed? I remember David. He used to play for me from time to time, but I don't remember. Can't remember his dad. I'm a senior. Sometimes I don't remember people's names. And so, the general of the army brings David back to Saul. David's still holding on to that head. I mean, it's a prize, man. I ain't let go of this. Ooey, gory, gory prize. And Saul said, "Well, who is your dad?" And David said, "Jesse the Bethlehemite." And so that's the family that will be free from taxation. I'd like to be free from taxation. How about you? That's where we in our story today. That's as far as we go. God bless David. In time, the king would offer those three enticements to David. Those things he had publicly announced he would offer. And David's life would dramatically change that day. He would no longer be seen as a shepherd boy from Bethlehem. From that point forward, he was David the warrior. David the warrior. And he would rise in esteem from the nation and from Saul. Everybody would see him with admiration. So as we end today's message, let me make two quick points of application. Because you know when you read the Bible, there's the what. And there's the so what. There's the what does the story say? What does it mean to us right now? There are two points of application. The first is simply this. God used David exactly as he was. He used David with the life experiences that David had had. He had prepared David by giving him conflict, by allowing a bear and a lion to attack his flock, by giving David the opportunity to learn how to fight with his slingshot and with his dagger, and he would eventually have a sword. He allowed David those life experiences. And the point is this, God uses us exactly as we are. I don't have to be better than I am for God to use me. I just have to submit to him as I am. Okay, Lord, I'm yours today. Use me with whatever abilities, talents, education, skills that we have. And I promise you, God's put something in your life that he can use. He's building things. And he's put things that he can use. You just submit yourself as you are. God can use you. But the second point of application is this. The reason why God used David and not one of the thousands of other guys who were in that Hebrew militia was because David's heart belonged to God. His heart was devoted to the Lord. He had a heart that said, "God, I want to honor you. I like all these enticements the king's offering. I do. I'm a teenage boy. I like these things. But, Lord, I honor you." When we have a heart that wants to honor God, God can use us. He can use us. And he can use us in unusual ways. He can use us. There's a scripture that comes from this same book of 1 Samuel. It's just earlier in the book. It comes from chapter 2. It's a simple statement where God is speaking through his prophet. And he says this, "Those who honor me, I will honor. Those who honor me, I will honor." That was true for David. That's true for us today. Let's bow for prayer.